So March 10th, the Caesars Palace Sportsbook decides Joel Embiid is now the favorite over LeBron James and Nikola Jokic for the NBA MVP.
Ramona Shelburne covers the NBA for ESPN.
He's averaging 30 points a game. The Sixers are in first place in the East. He's trying to become the first center to win MVP since Shaquille O'Neal in 2000.
Now on Embiid, Thompson took a shot earlier. Joel quickly around Tice and giving him the stare down after slamming.
March 12th, he's coming back from the 10-day quarantine that forced him out of the All-Star game. And the first game back is against the Washington Wizards. It could have been against anyone, because whoever he was going to play that night, he was taking it out on.
Oh, Embiid emphatically slamming in the face of Wagner.
Oh my goodness.
He had four dunks that night. And the last dunk, where he takes the dribble handoff from Tobias Harris, he goes up, the contact comes from Garrison Matthews, he goes and turns to the side, and instead of just laying it up, he decides to dunk it, just to prove a point. And when he lands, everything goes wrong.
And throwing down two, and daring to get in his way was Garrison Matthews, and Embiid is hurt. And he is clearly in pain.
As soon as I just fell, and the pain, the first thing that I'm thinking about is my season is over. There's no championship. There's no more MVP. There's no more Defensive Player of the Year. In that time, I'm like, why does it always have to happen to me? I get so close every single time. It's just something always has to happen.
Something is always happening to Joel Embiid. For the first half of this NBA season, it seemed like the process would finally fulfill every prophecy about his potential. But then came the COVID protocols and that knee injury. And while MVP is pretty much off the table, Embiid's Sixers are now the number one seed in the Eastern Conference for the first time in 20 years. Today, before the playoffs, Ramona Shelburne goes behind the scenes with Embiid himself, who tells the story of how he got to this point and what he wants desperately to happen next. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, May 13th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Ramona Shelburne, thank you for coming back on to ESPN Daily.
Anytime, Pablo.
So we had you on the show in January to talk about Joel Embiid, and it was a promising, very different time along this weird roller coaster that is this guy's life. He was looking fantastic. It was the early part of the NBA season. But now you've written this cover story, Ramona, in which you got a lot of access to Joel himself and you got access to his interior life. And I want to talk about that because there's a lot about this roller coaster that I did not fully appreciate until I read your reporting. So let's just set the scene here for where we left off after we talked in January. This is before the knee injury in mid-March. What kind of a season was Joel Embiid having?
He was having one of the greatest seasons for a center in NBA history. No center has averaged 30 points a game since Moses Malone. No center has won an MVP since Shaquille O'Neal. And Joel Embiid is dominating at both ends of the court.
Embiid galloping in.
Wow.
Count it and a foul. Joel Embiid for the tie. Got it. Joel Embiid coming up large. Blocked on the play by Embiid. What a play by Joel. All bets are over now. Joel is unleashed.
When you come into the NBA, you have all this promise and potential, and we all had to wait 2 years to even see Joel play because he was hurt the first 2 years. And finally, he and Ben Simmons get it going in their third year together, but they're still young. You're still like, okay, one day these guys are going to be good. It's amazing how quickly one day turns into, oh, these guys can't win. They're done. They're coming up on their sell-by date.
Yep.
When you have all the talent in the world and you're trying to get through and break through to the next level, you have a couple of cracks at it before people start saying, when are you going to win? And I think they're there. I think it's this year. And I think they all feel the sense of urgency. That's probably what the biggest difference in Joel this year has been, is that he looked in the mirror and said, I got to be better. I got to eat right. I got to stay in shape all year long. I have to get the post and stay there. I can't get frustrated when I'm not involved in the offense early. They got to run the offense through me. And when he and Ben Simmons are on the court, they have the number one defense and the number two offense.
Ramona, this season means so much to this organization, and it means so much to the people who've been suffering along with this team. And Joel Embiid is the reason any of this is going to go well. And I just want to juxtapose here, Ramona, the 2021 version of Joel that you just described with the version now who came over from Cameroon as a 16-year-old in 2010.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if people still fully appreciate when and how Joel Embiid even got into playing basketball in any way that could be confused for serious.
I still just have to remind myself all the time of how he's just picked up a ball like 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, it's really not that long that he's been playing basketball.
It's and nuts.
It's unbelievable how good he is and how much he understands the game for somebody who just started playing because he watched Kobe in the finals and thought that was cool. Like, he literally watched Kobe in the finals and was like, oh, I want to do that. And his parents wanted him to play volleyball. His dad was a great handball player. When I did the interview with him, I showed him a clip of himself in high school. Mm. And he went to Montverde Academy in Florida. And that's a great high school. A
basketball factory.
School, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't on the varsity. He was on the JV, and there's this clip of him where he's like jumping out of bounds and he doesn't really know what to do with the ball. He looks like a completely different person. And like, this was like 8-9 years ago. It's not that long ago that he's been, and I showed it to him and he's like, yeah, I knew you were going to find that clip, you know?
It kind of makes sense that I made that type of play because I had no idea how to play basketball, and I was just, I guess, being tall and running around. I just thought I had no chance. I had just started playing basketball and I just had no idea about what I was doing.
So hold on. So when he gets to Kansas, Ramona,
yeah.
Because he becomes a legitimate prospect. Kansas is a basketball powerhouse, of course. What was he like at that point?
I think he had a little imposter syndrome.
You know, even when I got to Kansas, I thought I was going to be there for like 4 or 5 years because I wanted to rush in my first year. I never really understood like what people saw in me. Everybody's talking about me being a number one pick or top three pick, but I'm like, I only average 11 points. So I had no understanding of college basketball or NBA. So I really didn't see what people saw in me.
I think he knew he had some talent, but I don't think he ever saw himself as this great, as this kind of player. And with good reason, he literally just started playing.
So part of this story that remains incredibly intriguing to me, Ramona, is that we're still meeting Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Like, we're still discovering what his powers are, what his personality really is, because he's so omnipresent, mm-hmm. seemingly on social media, on advertisements. We think we know him, but what we've met in 2021, Ramona, the Joel Embiid of this season versus the Joel Embiid of 2018, 19, 20, how do you compare those people?
What's impressive to me and how I've seen the evolution this year is he used to watch head-to-head matchups, Pablo. He used to watch himself against Jokic or Karl Towns, DeMarcus Cousins, Whiteside, you know, all the good centers in the league. And he'd watch that, and that's the tape he would break down, because he would study their moves and he would try to incorporate them. And he would always watch the individual players, and that's why he picked up the game so fast. But now he's watching how teams defend him. And that's where the Sixers have gotten knocked down in the past, because when they get to the playoffs, teams like the Celtics started this, then the Raptors, they just bring the house at him. They just, you know, three guys trap him, force the ball out of his hands, and it's on the rest of the Sixers to adjust and score. And realize it's not about what I'm going to do against Karl Towns. It's not about what I'm going to do against Jokic or head-to-head matchups. It's about, how am I going to counter it when the Celtics send three guys at me? How am I going to still be effective as a player when the Raptors trap me in the corner? And that's like the next level that he's gotten to this year. I think mostly because he failed in the past and realized he can't just be a dominant player one-on-one anymore.
Well, you mentioned there, Ramona, the defensive strategy the Toronto Raptors deployed against Embiid in the Eastern Conference semifinals in 2019, which is still seared into my brain. And that brings me to something from your reporting here, because you kind of went Last Dance on Embiid.
Yeah.
You played video clips for him to react to specifically. And there was one moment having to do with that most public humiliation he's ever experienced that he seemed to know that you were about to spring on him. What was that exchange like?
He knew what was coming. I told him, I said, I got some clips for you. I just want to take you down memory lane. And I go, there's one you may not like. He goes, I already know. It's the one with Kawhi, huh? Probably not gonna like this next clip, but I gotta show it to you so we can go back to this time.
Let me guess, the Kawhi shot.
It's off to Leonard. Is this the dagger?
You look at this shot, is like how many bounces on each rim, and like I just don't understand to this day. Like that was I felt like I made him take a tough shot. That's a tough shot that I don't know how many people can hit. That was a tough one. That was our year.
It was interesting that's where his mind went. How much just a bounce here or there changes your whole life story, changes everything that's going on in your career and in your life. Kawhi Leonard's shot bounces on the rim an impossible amount of times. It goes through, and instead of the Sixers breaking through and going to the Eastern Conference Finals, where they would have played the Warriors, who like half the team got hurt in the finals. Like,
yes.
I think Philadelphia might have won that just like the Raptors won it, considering how many injuries Golden State has. How different Joel's career would be right now if Kawhi's shot bounces out.
But the biggest shot in Raptor history bounces in. 1, 2, 3, 4.
In the playoffs, I just wasn't myself. A lot of people don't know this, but my knee was just not good at the time. I in any of the playoff games, I just couldn't jump. And obviously, I got sick during that whole series.
Because he had the knee injury, he was rehabbing around the clock, which meant he wasn't sleeping as much. He wasn't eating as well. He wasn't taking care of himself. And it caught up with him. And he got sick in that series. Remember, he missed a game there.
Yeah.
When he did play, he wasn't at his best level. And I think that's always stuck with him and stuck with the guys on the team. Like, he wasn't at his best when they needed him to be at his best.
I felt like I let everybody down because I had such a great regular season. If I had taking better care of my body. Like if I just hadn't gotten sick, we would have won that series easily.
And then after the game, Ramona, I mean, the post game ends up being almost as haunting as the actual Kawhi Leonard shot, because Joel Embiid is then immortalized as a meme. Because what does he do?
He's crying. He's crying on the shoulder of his girlfriend, Annie DePaula.
Losing a game that way. Everybody gave everything they had. You know, everybody left everything on the court. From the coaches.
I mean, they were so close. And you feel the pain of losing a basketball game very acutely when something like this happens. Like, it's just, you're one minute you're going to the NBA Finals, the next minute you're going home and all your finals dreams are over.
Are you able to take us through what you were thinking, what was going through your mind that moment after the game?
You know, a lot of things go through your mind and it sucks. I don't know, I can't explain it. It just sucks.
This is a guy who's been through a lot in his life, and he lost a basketball game, and in that moment, it's the biggest deal. But as bad as that was, he's been through a lot worse.
All right, Ramona, after the break, Joel Embiid grapples with a devastating tragedy.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Ramona, you had just mentioned that Joel Embiid's, his struggles in the league, they paled in comparison to a tragedy that devastated him and his family shortly after he got drafted. What has Joel told you now about what happened exactly and what he experienced?
I think what's interesting about learning somebody's life story after you've met them is you have to then go back and put yourself in his shoes. Okay, so Joel is a stranger in a strange land. He's come from Cameroon to America to play basketball, this sport that he had just barely started playing. He knows nobody. He ends up going third to the Philadelphia 76ers. All of this is coming at him fast, and his family flies in. His parents go to Los Angeles, where he is working out and training before the draft. And his brother, Arthur, who he's 7 years older then, but they were really close growing up. His brother comes over to visit him. But because Joel has the foot surgery, the doctors tell him he can't travel. And Arthur's in Philadelphia. Joel's in Los Angeles. They're so close, but so far away, and they don't actually get to see each other. And Arthur flies back to Cameroon. And while Joel is still out with this foot injury, he gets a call.
I had a bunch of calls from a bunch of people. People just kept calling me. So I ended up picking up the phone.
He gets a call that Arthur has been killed by a truck on his way home from school. He's just walking home from school and he gets hit by a truck. He's 13 years old.
I couldn't stop crying. I was all over the place. I was, you know, throwing stuff, and I was trying to understand what was going on. And I couldn't really talk to my parents because my mom, she was crying, and I don't think she could have gotten on the phone at that time.
I can't even imagine what isolation he was feeling, what sadness he was feeling.
The next day, I was on a plane with my sister back to Cameroon.
Joel's back home with his family after this horrible tragedy. And he's wondering, like, why should I go back? Like, why? I missed my brother. If I was here, I would have gotten to be with him all this time. And instead, I'm over in America trying to play basketball, but I keep getting hurt and I haven't done anything. I mean, it's, you know, you're away for like what ends up being the last few years of Arthur's life. And he wanted to quit. He did not want to come home.
I just felt so bad. So my head was all over the place. And at that time, I was just like, I don't want to come back. Like, I just want to stop playing basketball. I don't want to do anything. I just want to stay there.
He wanted to quit playing professional basketball altogether.
Yeah. He just wanted to stay home in Cameroon. Like, what are you doing? I mean, why am I? I just gave up my life and my family to go chase this dream. And it's been 2 years and my foot's all messed up and I don't know if I'm ever going to play again, if I'm ever going to feel right. I hardly know anyone in the States. Like, my life is here. My family's here. And, you know, the Sixers, like, there was a time where they weren't sure he was going to come back.
Ramona, how did the Sixers ultimately persuade him to return? Or how does Joel feel comfortable enough to actually stick with this plan that had taken him away from his family?
Well, they gave him space. They understood that the best place for him at that moment was with his family and the people that he loved. And I think they understood, like, you can't push this guy right now. Like, you can't, he doesn't need to come back to Philadelphia. He can't even play right now. Like, what, he's going to fly home after this horrible tragedy and so he can rehab? And eventually, he's over there long enough, he realizes, yeah, I do want to come back.
Spent about 3 weeks to a month over there. And, you know, I started feeling a little better. And I just felt like, yeah, like I just, like, it's, I guess I'm ready to go back.
I left home for a reason, and Arthur was on board. Like, Arthur wanted his big brother to chase his dream. He wanted to see what he could do.
I just felt like, well, I got to do it for him. I got to do it for my family. So it's not just about me anymore. I just got to do it for him.
I think when you look at the story of Joel Embiid, there's so many moments where he could have just stopped. Just, you know, 2 years of injuries, the setback after setback, all these ill-timed things that happen, the tragedy with his brother. And he keeps going because I think deep inside he knows that he has the potential to be one of the greatest players who's ever played. He can win championships, plural. Like, it's there for him. He sees it. And when you have that, it's really hard to walk away from it because you kind of owe it to yourself and you owe it to your family and you owe it to everyone who supported you along the way to see that through when you have that kind of ability.
So then 6 years later, Ramona, Joel Embiid and his girlfriend Annie, they're pregnant. And it seems like it wasn't a hard decision as to what to name their son.
As soon as Joel finds out that they're going to have a boy, there wasn't a debate.
There was no second thought. Like, I just knew when I found out, I just knew his first name was going to be Arthur.
It's a way of honoring his brother. It's a way for Joel to feel like his brother is still with him. Every time he looks at his son, he thinks about his brother as well. Like, you can't bring your brother back after something like this, but it's a way to honor him. And it's a way for him to feel like he's still with him. And you know, one of the things I learned about Joel in reporting this, and I got to talk to Annie for the story, like, you know, sometimes people talk about fatherhood changes somebody because they have different priorities and they really, it gives them a center. But like, Arthur has become Joel's life. I mean, when they're out on the road, Joel Embiid calls home on FaceTime every night in the hotel, and he's on FaceTime with Annie and Arthur, and he literally falls asleep with the FaceTime on. When he gets home, you know, he'll get up early so that he can play with Arthur before he has to go to practice. I mean, if you know Joel like I know him, you know how big a deal that is. Like, this is his life. He could have been gone for a week. He could be playing with toys. He could be playing with his grandparents or Annie. The second Joel walks in the room, Arthur drops everything and wants to play with his dad. Like, they are just bonded. And I think there's this really powerful moment when he gets hurt in Washington that night And everyone thinks, like, this is it. His season's over.
The way I'm feeling, I'm like, my season is over. It has to be an ACL or something because of the pain. And, like, I just, like, it was that bad.
He went to his locker and found his phone, and he checked the baby monitor, and he saw that his son had woken up in the middle of the night. Like, you know, how did he know? Like, did Annie wake him up?
I was talking to Annie. I got hurt, and then I go to the locker room. She actually told me that, you know, as it happened, like, he just woke up and just started crying out of nowhere. Like, he just started screaming out of nowhere, and I just thought he was interested.
He's in a deep sleep, and he wakes up like he had a nightmare. At the same time, his dad got hurt.
Yeah. He looks like a new.
They just have this bond. And, you know, you wonder why this one turned out better. Like, this one turned out as a bone bruise, not an ACL. Like, they get to keep playing. He caught this incredible break. It could have been so much worse. Like, I've watched that play 5 times. Every time I see it, I think he tore his ACL.
Same.
I think he broke his knee. I think every ligament in there looks like it's got to be shredded. Nope. Something held him together. And Joel, there's a part of him that just feels like, wow, man, maybe this happened for a reason. Maybe something's different. Maybe Arthur's just this connection that I have with him. Maybe that's what's different. And you know, we won't know until we see what happens in the playoffs. That's what's so great about this story is that, you know, they're right there. This really could be the year. And sometimes teams win because they stop putting pressure on themselves. Sometimes they just finally let it go and say, okay, I can't worry about what it was supposed to be or whatever. I don't know how it's going to go for the Sixers if they ever break through, but I know this year has been different for Joel. And I know this injury went different than the other injuries have. And I know they have a chance.
But it is important to note, Rubona, that injury that you started the show with, that we just detailed here, that injury is kind of the biggest reason why Joel Embiid is not going to be the MVP. It's the reason why Nikola Jokic, who's played in every game, who has been consistently healthy and on the court, it's the reason why that guy's going to win it.
Joel Embiid will never concede this. He will never just say, oh, well, Jokic deserves it. I mean, he says he had a good year. But he has gotten himself to the place where he can believe that maybe this all happened for a reason. Maybe this is how I stay fresh all the way to the playoffs. Because if he would have chased the MVP and played all the games just because he knew he was in it, maybe he would have got hurt again. Maybe he wouldn't have been fresh. He's not going to concede the MVP, though, Pablo. He's never. He really, like, it doesn't matter what you say to him. He really believes that he's the MVP.
How is he feeling, Ramona? Because he must, at the very least, he must know that he's not going to win it, right? Like, that reality must have sunk in. But you're telling me that there is still some larger resistance going on.
Oh, yeah. Look, let's just say that he has watched the clip of LeBron James at the end of last year's finals talking about, I want my damn respect too, okay?
We just want our respect. Our organization want their respect. Laker Nation want their respect. And I want my damn respect too.
He's watched that clip several times, and I think he's probably come up with his version of what he would say if he were so lucky to be in the same position this year.
With the way I started playing basketball 10 years ago, and, you know, and I've told you that before, I feel like my life is a movie, like everything happens so fast. You know, at the end of the day, I want to be considered one of the greatest of all time. So for that, you know, I got to win championships and I got to win those type of rewards.
I think deep down, Joel knows that his legacy is not going to be defined by how many MVP awards he wins. It'll be defined by whether he completes the process and wins a championship in Philadelphia. When you look at this season and you look at it as part of the larger Joel Embiid legacy, the rest of the story still has to be written.
Ramona Shelburne, thank you, as always, for telling us where this insane story might be headed next.
I have a feeling we'll be talking about the Sixers someday, again soon.
You can check out Ramona Shelburne's cover story on Joel Embiid right now on ESPN.com. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.